You're with Serinda Mackey on Weekend Evenings. These days, when classical music's played live, the audiences usually behave themselves. They sit quietly, refrain from coughing, certainly don't heckle or engage in ribald behaviour. But things were different when a lot of music from earlier centuries was written. Audiences in the opera houses of the 17th and 18th centuries were more likely to be noisy and inattentive, and sometimes become very passionate about what they were hearing. And they often included not just the nobility, but inmates from insane asylums, drunkards, and quite frequently, prostitutes who threw oranges at bad performers, and even blowing whistles sold for just that purpose. Well, the Australian Chamber Orchestra is about to put on performances under the banner Baroque Revelry, which promises to explore the sordid and ultra-vibrant world of the Baroque Concert Hall. Though I'm not too sure about the prostitutes and oranges. Erin Hellyard, harpsichordist and artistic director of Pinchgut Opera, will join the ACO on stage for the performances. And Erin's been a friend of the ACO's artistic director, Richard Tognetti, for 2 decades, and he joins us now. Erin, welcome to Weekend Evenings.
Hi, Serene. Thank you.
Now, these concerts sound wild. How was it back in those Baroque days?
Yeah, you gave such a great introduction. Exactly. I think one of the most interesting things for any student of music history is noting that there was this enormous change in audience behaviour that we've inherited, and that took place in the 19th century. You'd go to a concert hall and you're sort of encouraged to treat it a bit like a sacred space or a church and be quiet, very attentive. And it's a wonderful way to appreciate music. But what's so interesting is for hundreds of years before that, audiences were not like that at all. They were exactly as you described. They were inattentive, but also very attentive. And there was much more of a discourse between the performers and the audience. So if the audience didn't like something, they let the performers know. If they liked something, they very much let them know. And Richard and I have been chatting about this idea for, oh gosh, ever since we did Sydney Festival together in about 2001. We were talking about how it's amazing we can reproduce period instruments or copies of old instruments, but we'll never be able to reproduce a period orchestra.
I loved that.
And so this program is a kind of exploration of trying to revive that idea, even just a glimpse of it, and just experiment with those ideas of this forgotten, lost audience.
Mental asylum inmates, really?
Yeah. So apparently in the 1750s, sometimes they would invite people from Bedlam to sort of come to the opera to see how they would react. I mean, it's a kind of bizarre and almost cruel thing to think about nowadays. But actually, it's the inspiration for a very short film by Robert Altman in a wonderful anthology of short films that Richard and I were highly influenced by called Aria, that was done back in the 80s. And Robert Altman used that story as a sort of anecdote.
Wow. And you were talking, well, I was mentioning a little bit in the introduction, you've talked about it as well, is that the audience were more likely to be distracted, facing away, playing chess.
Exactly.
So I wonder, curious in terms of how that, it sounded like that just organically happened, that culture in terms of how you enjoyed music in that way just It happened, then it evolved.
Yeah, I think what happened to what's really interesting is that composers knew about this, and so they designed their music in a way to get people's attention or for it to be really pleasant background music.
Right.
And I think they'd be really surprised if they time traveled and came to the future and saw us all very reverently listening to their music.
It'd be boring, I reckon.
Well, I think they would be really astonished and highly honoured, actually, that right. This music that was designed as a sort of ephemeral product is now being seen as something in a museum to be treasured. Mm. But Richard and I have always talked about that something's lost a little bit there. There's spontaneity and freshness and that wonderful relationship between the audience and the performer that the ACO has engendered so well over the decades with Richard at the helm. I think this program is a really great exploration of that. And so to that end, Richard has started a collaboration with Belvoir Street Theatre. So we have four wonderful actors who are doing little vignettes just to sort of demonstrate almost a sort of kaleidoscopic view of the kind of audience behaviour that went on in the 17th and the 18th centuries.
It would be kind of cool if you could get your audience, if you could find a way, because what you said, I think, was, for me, really hit the mark in that you can recreate a period instrument but not a period audience. But how cool would it be if you could, like, in some way, shape or form, get them to, right, so here's your brief, here's your role, and let them let loose to a certain extent.
Exactly. I think it survives in some ways.
And give out oranges.
Absolutely. I think it survives in some extent in jazz performances. So if you go to a jazz club, there'll be connoisseurs close to the band who are listening. And then further back, there are people who are just enjoying the show and talking. And the same in a mosh pit or any pop music.
True.
There's different. So I think it survived in human culture, but for some reason it was expunged from classical music. The main culprit just between you and me is Richard Wagner. Very interesting, amazing, phenomenal opera composer. But he's the first person to turn the lights off in the theatre, create a rake, make sure that all the seats focused on the stage. And since then, we've inherited that form. Mm. So for good or ill, that's what classical music is nowadays. But I think it's really fun to just meditate and think about the fact that for hundreds of years, it wasn't like that.
And what about you, Aaron? How, you're a harpsichordist, how did you get into playing this period instrument?
This crazy instrument, yeah. Well, look, like everyone else, I started on piano. Mm. But actually, my story of becoming a harpsichordist is intrinsically linked with ABC radio.
Okay.
So when I was a teenager growing up on the Central Coast, there was no internet. I had a wonderful library at home of my parents' books. They were very much into literature, so I had this fabulous collection of books. But ABC provided me with a fabulous collection of music. So I remember I subscribed to 24 Hours at the time, which was the schedule, the printed schedule of all the music that ABC Classic would broadcast, and I would highlight the pieces that I wanted to listen to and program my digital cassette player. Remember those?
Digital cassette player where you have to hit play and record at the same time.
Exactly. Well, it would go off at like 2 a.m. because it was, you know, to get something. And then I had these boxes and boxes of cassette tapes, which my mum threw out quite a while ago because I can't use them anymore. But, I mean, the ABC was my internet. It was my source of knowledge, and it introduced me to the sound of the harpsichord. And so when I was about 12, 13, I thought, oh, my gosh, there's this crazy instrument. I really loved Bach, but every time I played it on the piano, it just felt a bit wrong.
Right.
And so when I heard Bach for the first time, and it was Gustav Leenhardt, the great Dutch harpsichordist, I thought, oh, that's the instrument that is written, that Bach works on. And then I was able to come to Sydney and study on the instrument. So, yeah, the ABC is really intrinsic to my development as a musician.
Oh, lovely. Well, pat on the back for us here at the end.
Absolutely.
But how lovely it is to hear how it's a particular piece of music that you heard that you wanted to play that led you to the harpsichord, the instrument. And then it went on from there?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, music is such a powerful thing. You know, it's a bit like a perfume you might smell and then you have a memory of that perfume all your life. You know, for me, and I think many others and all of our listeners have a very visceral relationship with music as well. And they did back in the 18th century as well, even that we've been talking about inattentive audiences, but there's lots of wonderful accounts of audiences just sitting in rapt attention. Mm. And also they were much more emotional than we are nowadays. Like, crying, you know, there are reports of the whole theatre in tears. People had a much closer and much more engaged emotional reaction with music. Mm. And I think maybe we've lost that a little bit too. And so this ACO program is another attempt to try and reinforce that bond that we have with music, which is so special.
It's lovely. It is lovely. And you're right on the emotion front, and you're definitely right on the instrument front. I've got a seven-year-old at the moment who, so her song of the month is ABBA's Gimme Gimme.
Oh, great.
Gimme Gimme Gimme. And we've got a little electric piano at home, and she's just jumping in and she's trying to hit the, you know, when it goes up just in the.
That's great.
Yeah. And she's getting so frustrated because she can't quite, she's like, it's not going as high as I want it to go, and they'll bring it back. So I'm going to take a tip from you. Maybe it's the wrong instrument. Maybe she has to try out something a little bit different.
Absolutely.
There you go. So, Erin, you're a longtime friend, as you, of course, you mentioned, of the ACO's artistic director, Richard Tognetti. And as you said, you were inspired for these concerts by the film Aria. Can you tell us a bit more about that? What in particular caught your imagination?
Well, that, I'm not sure if some of the... older listeners that are listening to us remember this extraordinary anthology of short films that was included people like Derek Jarman, Robert Altman, Bruce Beresford, I think, is in there as well. And it's just what happened is they gave very small operatic scenes to directors and said, look, you just go ahead and do what you want with these opera scenes. And when I saw the film, it just unlocked something for me. It introduced me to the world of opera, which is where my specialty now, because I could see how the vision of a director could utterly transform and also deepen my appreciation for the music. And the particular sketch that has sort of informed this particular program with the Australian Chamber Orchestra is the Richard Altman sketch. Okay. And it's this wonderful, it's a wonderful conceit that you see directors like Isfahan Szabo use. So instead of looking at the stage in a theatre, the camera just looks at the audience. So you hear music, there's some sort of performance going on, but in this short film, it's the audience that's the subject of the camera's attention. And so it's like music history coming alive. You see all the things you mentioned in your wonderful introduction, prostitutes coming on to aristocrats, crazy people, people singing along, people eating, people flirting. I mean, these are all the wonderful things that you read about in letters and journals of the time. It was interesting. The prostitutes, apparently, they sold the oranges to other people.
Did they?
When they weren't getting any trade. And then Richard and I have often commented on if oranges were the fruit of choice to throw at performers in the 18th century, can you imagine how it would have smelt the theatres, rotting oranges?
Lovely, lovely. If you've just joined us, you're with me, Serene Damaki, on ABC Radio's National Weekend Evenings. We are chatting with Erin Hellyard, harpsichordist and artistic director of Pinch Gut Opera. And look, can you tell us a bit about what music will be included? So this is, as you were mentioning, collaboration between Australian Chamber Orchestra and Sydney's Belvoir Street Theatre.
Yeah, so it's sort of divided into sort of roughly different kinds of aspects of 18th century life. So if you know your Hogarth, for example, it sort of resembles a little bit the different plates you might see in The Rake's Progress or Marriage à la Mode, which are these wonderful paintings that sort of depict amazing scenes in 18th century life. So we have the irreverent, we have the theatrical, we have the diabolical, the sublime, the grotesque, and some other surprises as well. But the music is... It's quite a mixed bag of music from the 17th and 18th century, but what connects it is the fact that it was designed for this kind of audience that we're trying to explore in this program. We have composers from England, France, Italy, men and women, and we have a whole variety of different genres, some opera, music meant for the chamber, music meant for court, music meant for all different kinds of sort of urban experiences in the 17th and the 18th centuries. It's got something for everyone, actually.
Well, let's hear a little of the music. And then when we come back, I want to talk about the visual aspect, what it's going to look like, because you've, by hearing you describe it, it's starting to paint a little bit of a picture in my mind. So I want to see if it's along those lines. But first, yes, let's hear a little music, which will be in the forthcoming concert. So this is with the harpsichord, and I'm going to try out my Italian here. Here is part of, is it Che si può fare cantare? No, hang on, I had it I said it right earlier when we were listening to the pronunciation
that
on
was
Google
very
Translate.
Good.
Que si può fare canta.
Very beautiful.
Oh, is that okay?
Yes,
all right,
by
cool.
Barbara Strozzi.
Okay, that's the one. She sounds fascinating. So what can you tell us about this piece we're about to hear?
Che si può fare is a lament. And a lament was a genre that was particularly popular in the 17th century. It was often given to women, and one of its defining features is a bass line that repeats over and over again. And it kind of symbolizes the entrapped persona of the woman lamenting her fate. And that's what we hear in this next excerpt.
Oh, that is beautiful. Excerpt there of Che si può fare canta, Barbara Strozzi. My Italian, still trying.
I think you're
Aaron,
doing a beautiful
still
job.
Trying. That is absolutely beautiful. So the mix of music spans, what, 150 years? What are the common features of the pieces chosen and what changes?
Yeah, well, look, this is what's wonderful about the Baroque period is I think a lot of people might just think of maybe one or two composers like Vivaldi or Bach. But in fact, in reality, there were hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of composers writing in hundreds and hundreds of different styles. And this program is really wonderful because it really demonstrates that. Not only do we have some well-known composers like Handel and C.P. Bach, who was the son of the great J.S. Bach, but we have little-known composers like Barbara Strozzi, who we just heard, and also composers like Leonarda. She was a nun, a Roman nun, who wrote some music. And we also have some naughty songs by a guy called Morley. So it's a real, it's like if you go to a wonderful restaurant and the chef just makes you, you know, six courses of whatever he or she thinks is the best at the time. And Richard has done very much the same here. And I think it's a testament to the great diversity of the Baroque period, this program. I think there's, as I said before, there's something for everyone.
We've got to hear another piece. There's a piece called The Devil's Dream, which has quite a story to it.
It does, yes, the Tartini. This is a great piece.
Tell us more. What's the story behind it?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So this is a sonata that, so Tartini was one of the great violin virtuosi of the 18th century. He was up there with people like Veracini and Vivaldi, and he was the generation before more well-known virtuosi like Paganini. But Tartini was apparently one night he had this dream that the devil had picked up his violin and was playing him a tune of utter sublimity and beauty, which then transformed into this fiendishly difficult piece. And when he woke up, he tried to notate this, not only the beautiful tune, but also the fiendishly difficult part, which is a section in double stops, which is where the violinist plays over more than one string. And sometimes these stories are later inventions of the 19th century, but actually this story does come from Tartini. He related it to a French lexicographer. And so we have the score, and even in the score, it writes above the moment where the trill happens, this is where the devil was at the foot of my bed. And the wonderful Satu Vanska is performing this in our performances here in Sydney.
That's incredible. Let's hear part of The Devil's Dream.
It's called the Devil's Trill, I think.
Oh, The Devil's Trill.
The Devil's Dream is fine too, but that's its nickname, yeah.
Wow, I could listen to that all day, and it's taken me back to 2003, Austria, in a period concert hall.
Oh, wow.
Yes, just hearing that. I remember a violinist, we were watching a concert.
Amazing.
Definitely not Baroque, we're really in that shape, but wow, took me way back there, Erin. Thank you. Oh, my goodness, this concert sounds awesome. So let's get to the concerts. So they'll be in Sydney. Oh, we're in Melbourne, but not in Melbourne anymore, unfortunately. But then you're also going online. So tell us about the concerts.
Yeah, so we have, I believe it's 5 concerts at City Recital Hall here in Sydney. And, sadly, we aren't able to go to Melbourne because of the restrictions on square meterage down there, which is really sad because I know our Melbourne listeners and friends would have loved to hear this concert. Mm. But yeah, very exciting. And I believe if you can't make the concerts themselves, it is being recorded by ABC Classic.
Excellent. And just a reminder, because I was just so caught up in that piece we were hearing, just to let our listeners know what we were hearing. So the piece you heard just then is the Violin Sonata in G minor. Is that right?
That's right.
Erin, of The Devil's Trill. And that's, is it Andante Allegro?
Very nice. Yeah, that's Tartini. Exactly right.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Now, a short piece to take us out, if you will. Could you please introduce, Erin, a string quintet in C major? Is it Passacagli?
Oh, yeah, the Passacagli. Yes. So Boccherini, Luigi Boccherini, is one of the great cellists of the 18th century. And this is one of his greatest works. It's the string quintet in C major, Musica Notturna. So it's like night music of Madrid. So this is what we call programmatic music. It's music that attempts to describe sounds that you might hear. So maybe birds or cats or the street sounds you might hear, bells. So it's what we call diegetic music. It's music that tries to imitate humans and nature as well. And most of our listeners might be more familiar with this piece from the soundtrack to Master and Commander, which was the wonderful film directed by Peter Weir with our own Russell Crowe.
Indeed.
And actually, the Australian Chamber Orchestra is featured on that soundtrack playing this very piece, and it's a fabulous tune.
Let's hear it, Erin. Thank you. And there's a short piece there of the string quintet in C major, Passacai Boccherini. Aaron, I can't thank you enough for bringing this beautiful music to us this evening. Just a short little preview of what's to come in your with the concerts. I'll have to say, of the three, probably The Devil's Trill was maybe my personal favourite. Thanks. So it's been wonderful chatting with you. Thanks for coming on the show, and all the best with the concerts.
Such a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Aaron Hellyard, harpsichordist and artistic director of Pinchgut Opera, who will be joining the Australian Chamber Orchestra for their upcoming concerts. And, oh, before I let you go, so when is the Sydney one? I don't know if we're talking about dates there, Aaron.
The first one we have is on Saturday, the 26th of June, and the last one is on the Wednesday, the 30th. And please do buy a ticket, because it's going to be phenomenal.
Where can people go to find out more information?
I think you can go to the ACO website. Yeah, exactly. Or City Recital Hall, which is the venue itself.
Excellent. And like you said, it'll also be online, so there'll be more information on the website of that.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thanks, Aaron. Serene Damaki on Weekend Evenings.